Obsessed with true crime cults or conspiracy theories? Conspiracy Theories, Cults, and Crimes is a weekly podcast from Crime House and Pave Studios that dives into the darkest corners of human behavior. Every Wednesday, we uncover the true stories behind the world's most shocking crimes, deadly ideologies, and secret plots. Follow and listen to Conspiracy Theories, Cults, and Crimes, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
In 20 minutes, you'll hear something that Joe Witt said at his press availability that has me very, very excited about what element of this defense. Before we get there, though, let's welcome on a good friend of mine. I haven't talked to this guy in a long time, so I'm excited to catch up. Nick Ashew is on with us. You'll hear Nick a lot more around here locally. I know he's doing overtime this week on 106.7 The Fan. Nick, what's up, my friend? How are you?
You know, I didn't even have to promote myself. You did it for me. I appreciate that.
Pro's pro over here. That's what I like to call myself.
Yeah, you know, it's good to kind of get out of, as you know, I can say what I say this as best I can. Sometimes you got to be on the sidelines for a little while. It's nice to kind of come out of the shadows and be back with you guys somewhat. So it'll be more as time goes on, for sure.
Speaking of the sidelines, we're all watching this Terry situation unfold from the sidelines. We're not in the game. We don't know how these negotiations are going outside of the random tidbits of information that people will tell us. What has been your perspective on where this is going and how it's gotten to where it's gotten?
This is so expected. I understand that this, and I include myself when I say this, this is a fan base that's scarred. And scarred from a lot of trauma with this organization for a long, long time. So you're going to see this situation, and you know, let's look at it from a surface level first, because you see so much of these reactions from people all over social media. And I know it's dangerous to start like gauging everything with social media, but let's just look at it for a minute. So many people are frustrated and angry, saying, take care of Terry. Look at what he's been through. Look at how important he's been to this organization. All of those sentiments are true. They're all real. But at the same time, this is that business aspect of sports that people don't like, but it's a reality. It's going to be there. It's always going to exist. And I've called this sort of the contract negotiation checklist. I need a shorter name, but for now, that's the name that I've got for it. And we'll work on the branding, you and I, maybe later, and we can come up with something a little bit better. But like, you go through the history of holdouts in the NFL and contract negotiations this time of year, they all look exactly the same. I mean, Micah Parsons basically jumped in the minute Terry decided to ask for a trade. Micah's like, me too. No, I want a trade. I don't want to be here anymore. And like, you just go down the list, and we've seen this every single year. Deebo Samuel was there in 2022. I know Adam Peters wasn't the general manager in San Francisco, but he was a part of that front office. There are steps that are taken that are very standard within this whole path to getting a new contract for star players, and Terry McLaurin is just a part of that now. And you know, you were talking about this earlier, and it's, you know, again, I do believe there's a little bit of a staging that's going on there, because nothing's real anymore. Everything's fake, and social media is either AI or somebody staged it. You know, the whole seeing Josh Harris and dapping him up and see, like, making sure that he's showing everybody, hey, I'm not mad at the organization, but I want to get what I want to get. I don't blame him, and I also don't blame Terry McLaurin for wanting to maximize his income now, right? Like, one, I'll never spend my time blaming an athlete for maximizing their income, period, but we're at that spot where this probably is, and you brought this up too, so I'll give you credit for this. Like, this is probably the last big contract given the age for Terry McLaurin, which is crazy to think. I mean, he's about to turn 30, and you know that in the NFL, it's not as much with running backs, but even wide receivers, you start thinking about what's that long term going to look like. There's a reason why so many star receivers over the years in the NFL have now been traded and then gotten a new deal, because other teams have maybe been willing to pay that money as opposed to the team that actually drafted him. So it's a frustrating situation. I understand why the fan base is upset with the way that it's been. But in the end, I have full confidence that this is going to work itself out, because, one, this organization knows how important he is, and two, they're not looking to rebuild. This is a team now with Super Bowl aspirations already, which is just crazy to think compared to what we were thinking this time last year.
What do you think he's going to get?
I mean, it's over 30. He's definitely getting over $30 million a year. I would be shocked if he doesn't get a number like that. I think the question really becomes, you know, what does the guaranteed money look like? What does the money look at the beginning versus the end of the contract? And what is the length? Like, those are some of the things. Because, so like, if you're Terry McLaurin, you've got to sort of also think to yourself, what's more important to me? Is it guaranteed money earlier? Is it long-term security, having maybe a longer contract? Like, those are where some of the negotiations and the balance is probably going to have to take place in this. And, you know, from everything we hear, whether it's talking to people or otherwise, that is kind of where we are. There's a million different pieces that have to fit together for this puzzle for both sides to work it out. But, you know, in the end, maximize your income now as much as you can, because let's not act like Terry McLaurin doesn't have leverage with this organization. He's got leverage and they need him.
Does it bring you comfort? So you mentioned that how scarred this fan base has been over the years. Does it bring you any sort of comfort knowing that they're not handling this anywhere near as poorly as Dallas is with Michael Parsons?
Listen, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, and there was a quote from Jerry Jones talking about, like, maybe wanting to step down from having a say in, you know, player personnel. And I know it's not just him anymore. Let me tell you something. I'm going to cry the day that Jerry Jones no longer makes any financial decisions on the football field for the Dallas Cowboys, because they may actually be run relatively well. I mean, for a team that's had Super Bowl aspirations for as long as they have, yet falling short every single year, it's at least eased the pain in the past of watching what the Commanders have looked like. But now it's obviously different. Listen, Jarrah loves to handle things exactly the same way. He loves the negotiation. He loves the fight. He loves to go in front of the media. Well, you know, every single year, I just want to make sure that all of our guys are taken care of, and we love them, but this is a negotiation. I don't want anybody to lose sleep over this. And you get to the point where it's the same script from Jerry Jones
every single year.
And, I mean, CeeDee Lamb comes out and says it. We saw it with Dak Prescott twice. So, again, this is... it's more glaring with Dallas because they've had so many big contract negotiations over the last few years, and they're just so, like, it's scripted to a T with the way Jerry Jones handles it. But it is, again, it's similar with most organizations. With the Bengals, let's say, the Bengals drag that thing out a lot longer. With Washington, we just haven't really been, like, in this spot as much, right? Because it's mostly been... something involving, you know, conversation's been around the name or ownership changes or the you know, a new stadium or whatever the case is. Now it's really about stuff going on the field, and we're kind of not used to that, right? It's actually about football for a change. This is still about football, but with Dallas, I hope the dysfunction lasts. Let me tell you something. If Micah Parsons decided he wants to play for Dan Quinn, that's always been the joke, right? Like, he'd come over to Washington. The trade's never going to happen. I hope he just plays out his contract, and then they just bring him over in a year. That would be unbelievable, just to do everything you can to continue to erode that Dallas defense as much as they've done.
I mean, how crazy would that be if Parsons is wearing, you know, the burgundy and gold wear number 11 next year? That would be absolutely insane. What is your level, Nick Ashley with me here on the Kevin Sheehan Show with Dende sitting in for Kevin. What's your level of excitement to see Deebo Samuel in this offense?
Well, one, apparently he's not as fat as he used to be, so that's a good start. Good for him. That's how
I'm jealous. Yeah.
Hey, listen, man, you just got married. You know, you've got a little bit more. You got some time to. You're settling in. You'll get back to it. You'll be fine. But listen, Deebo can be used in so many ways, because, like, Curtis Samuel years ago was kind of Deebo light to me, right? Where it's like you wanted to use him the way Deebo was used in the 49ers offense in his prime. And it never really worked out with Curtis Samuel. But now having Deebo Samuel for really, I mean, a friend of mine's a 49ers fan. I remember when they traded for Deebo, and he's like, hey, thanks for taking our trash. I was like, dude, we gave you a fifth-round pick for a guy that's going to be motivated. This was a great deal for Washington. They can use him in so many different ways. We know that he can, you know, use him out of the slot, use him as a, you know, just get the key for me with Deebo Samuel, just get the ball in his hands and let him do what he does. Now, do I expect peak Deebo Samuel? I'm not going to put those expectations that high. He's not the number one option. We know Terry McLaurin is going to be the number one option. But for a team that struggled in the run game a lot last year as well, to add the dynamic of Deebo Samuel out of the backfield is a whole other element that they didn't really have consistently necessarily last year. I mean, you did to a point, but Deebo obviously adds another really good layer to that. And if he's back motivated and in the shape, you know, I guess every guy heading into this time of year is in the best shape of their life and feeling great. We hear that line every single year. But, you know, if he does kind of live up to those expectations as, like, the number two weapon, let's say, in that offense, I think you've got yourself an offense that adds a little bit more of a dynamic aspect to it, a little bit more creativity. So we hopefully don't see the fall off that we had that stretch last year. Remember, it was like, oh, God, is Cliff Kingsbury's offense hitting that wall? Like, if you don't have that and you continue to get creative and you use these layers that Deebo Samuel brings to the table, it adds something that continues to keep defenses guessing. Because let's be honest with ourselves, you do worry a little bit. I think everybody does, at least to a point, because we've seen it. A sophomore slump for somebody like Jaden Daniels.
Are you in on the Ja'Cory Kroski merit hype, a.k.a. Bill?
Let me tell you something. Every single year, I saw it. I don't remember who wrote this, so I can't give them credit. But every single year, there's sort of the training camp hype. There's the young, unknown guy hype with this organization in somebody that's going to step up. And, you know, I'm looking at the Commanders depth chart right now, and he's sitting there, you're behind Austin Ekeler and Brian Robinson Jr., and you're looking at a running back and going, well, anything's possible for running back drafted in the seventh round, right? We've seen it enough in the NFL where it's the case. I try to temper my expectations with anybody, though, that is, hey, looks really good in camp, looks really good in drills, even looks good in a couple of preseason games because we've been there. I want to kind of stay level here, but what I do know is this offense did not have a consistent run game last year. I wanted to see more Chris Rodriguez last year. We saw flashes of Jeremy McNichols last year getting carries. It was all flashes. If they could find some level of consistency, even if it's just consistent running back rotations, I would love to see that because the run game was insanely frustrating last year, and I just don't want to see them leaning so much on Jaden again this year and year two if they can avoid it.
Nick Ashley with me here on the Kevin Sheehan Show with Dent Day sitting in for Kevin here on the Team 980. You can watch us on YouTube as well. Subscribe to us at the Team 980. Are you excited for the new defense, the revamped defense, even though they didn't make a ton of changes on that defensive line?
Listen, I'm excited for one. The key is that defense actually staying healthy. Two, seeing how all the old guys actually perform. You know what's funny? The addition of Von Miller, this shows you, I'm actually glad that I'm not a reporter. I've never been a reporter. So when I was actually at Dulles Airport, I'll never forget this, a few weeks ago, and I was actually flying up to Boston with my wife to visit my brother and his girlfriend. Nobody cares about that story, but that's the reason why I was there. Anyway, walking through the airport when I'm going to my terminal, I'm like, is that Von Miller walking through the airport right now? So I started texting a few people that actually, cover the team and would know, and I was like, is Von Miller scheduled for an interview with the Commanders? Because I swear I just saw him in the airport. Couldn't get a straight answer. Of course, a month later or whatever it was, he ends up signing with the team. And I'm like, hey, I'm glad I didn't have to break that story because I could have been right, could have been wrong. Look, this defense has at least a lot of – look, Bobby Wagner, what he was able to do for this defense last year, I know he's older and it's not peak Bobby. Bobby Wagner was great. I'm hoping to see something similar that from a Von Miller this year. I'm hoping to see a situation here where your secondary with Marshawn Lattimore is actually consistent and healthy. They've certainly improved. You're right. Did they go out and do a ton on defense? Not necessarily, but there's something to be said for bringing in veterans where if you're pass rush, your defensive line, guys that are getting after the quarterback, let's look at linebackers and let's look at, defensive line kind of as a whole here. If they're rotating guys into different positions and keeping them fresh, if you can get Von Miller for a few snaps rest, and they're utilizing him well with a Bobby Wagner and Frankie Louvu and go down the board there with some of those guys, this can be a very successful defense, even if they're not, young and at the peak, and it's not the defensive line that had all the hype that we had necessarily years ago for them. So I certainly feel better about it where it was last year. But hey, look, I mean, that defense, you go back to especially the playoff game against Detroit, which Detroit struggled turning the ball over in their first preseason game. I know it's preseason, but you look around and go like, hey, this defense certainly has a ceiling that's maybe, it was obviously higher than what we expected last year. And I expect this defense to certainly better than where they were at any point last season.
So I'm optimistic, Nick, as we revert back to the biggest story of the summer so far with Terry. I'm optimistic that a deal gets done by Friday when they have their first preseason game. Do you have a timeline in which you want to see this or think that this is going to get done?
So I think you're more optimistic than me. I actually thought the trade request was going to come a little bit later. I feel like the timeline's kind of all been moved up a little bit. I, having learned over the years when it comes to any contract negotiation, and my contract negotiations have never been at the level that Terry McLaurin's have been, things take longer than you expect. Let's just look at it that way. So, again, if you told me that Terry McLaurin signs a deal by the first preseason game, I'd believe it. But if you told me this thing drags out until towards the end of camp, I mean, go look at the way the 49ers negotiated stuff before. Again, Adam Peters, part of that front office, he may really dig in. It's a general manager, general managing. He's going to negotiate because this also sets a tone of, there's two tones that you have to set if you're Adam Peters right now in that front office. It's one, You want to show that you take care of your franchise guys. I mean, Terry McLaurin, we know how valuable he is to this organization. But two, you also want to show we're not just going to cave in and just throw all the money at you that you want. This isn't that last payday for players coming in late in their career like it used to be the early stages under Dan Snyder. So you've got to kind of balance both of those worlds a little bit. I don't think this drags into the regular season, but I would actually be surprised. You're way more optimistic than me. I don't think that this is done by the first preseason game.
If this drags into the regular season, it's going to be a nightmare covering this team. Have you looked into any futures? Do you gamble on teams that you support? I kind of try and stay away from that personally.
So I know you and I have talked about this before in the various betting shows that you and I have done. I very rarely, though I dabbled in the Commanders last year, stay away from teams that I'm emotionally invested in. I know some people like to emotionally hedge. That, to me, you're already letting emotion get involved in your betting. If you want to be a smart bettor, don't let emotion get involved whatsoever. You know me, I'm a big props guy. I'll stick with the props probably for the season a lot. But when it comes to, like, Commanders win total, do I think that they're like a 10-win team? Yes, of course. The schedule is tougher than where it was last year, but you know, the Eagles take that first place schedule. Again, strength of schedule this time of year means almost nothing because we're looking at either projected win totals or last year, so it means almost nothing. But I tend to stay away from anything serious that's where I'm emotionally invested in that team, because whether you want to say that you're fully unbiased, you're not. There's always an emotion that creeps in there. So give me props during the regular season for this team. I might bet individually on some games, but in terms of like season outlook for them, I'm just staying away, man. Because, well, again, I was so wrong last year. We all were wrong. Nobody expected them to win 12 games like they did last year. So that's proof right there. Just, it's better to just stay away from anything that involves emotion and money. Bad idea.
Yeah. Bad idea. Good idea is having Nick Ashew back in D.C. Nick, I appreciate it, my friend.
Good to talk to you, buddy.
That is Nick Ashew. You will hear him on 106.7 The Fan later this week. He's good enough to jump on with us here. So we talked a little bit about defense there with Nick. There's something that Joe Witt said that I think could be very, very important moving forward, and it's one of the units that I've been the most impressed with throughout the course of training camp. I'll play that audio for you when we get back. Don't go anywhere. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show with Dende sitting in for Kevin.
Obsessed with true crime, cults, or conspiracy theories? Conspiracy Theories, Cults, and Crimes is a weekly podcast from Crime House and Pave Studios that dives into the darkest corners of human behavior. Every Wednesday, we uncover the true stories behind the world's most shocking crimes, deadly ideologies, and secret plots. Follow and listen to Conspiracy Theories, Cults, and Crimes, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Kevin Sheehan Show. Denton Day sitting in for Kevin here on the Team 980. At the Denton Day on Twitter. It is coordinator day at the podium. So both Cliff Kingsbury and Joe Witt Jr. speaking today. I wanted to play this bit of audio, but the live stream.
I tried.
Max put it. He put in the work. He tried his best. The live stream did not start in time to capture this. It was like the best. It was the best thing.
It started at the end of the first question, that the quote that Keim tweeted out, I immediately saw it, was like, I gotta find this. And then Denton said, find it.
You gotta find it. Yeah. And we just couldn't. But the quote is as follows. Joe Witt Jr. was asked about Trey Amos, and he said, Trey has a good day every day. Now, if you've listened to Joe Witt Jr. cuts, which Kevin plays them on a regular basis, and I, you know, had to cut them a lot last season, he is great at the podium. He's a really good speaker, and he really hypes his guys up a little bit. It's like if Ron Rivera had charisma. That's pretty much what Joe Witt is. Like, he's just a really, really good speaker.
Anytime he speaks, I'm ready to run through a brick wall.
Like, you're like, hey, I'll go play DB right now. Yeah, like, I'm ready for it.
Let's do it.
But him praising Trey Amos, I think, is a part of a little bit of a bigger conversation that I have been a little hesitant to have, knowing that Terry isn't practicing. Terry McLaurin not practicing impacts everybody, because that means the DBs are not going up against the team's best wide receiver. However, in what I have seen from the DBs, particularly on Saturday was a great day for the DBs just from a coverage standpoint. I thought there wasn't a lot of turnovers. That's partly because you're facing off against Jane Daniels, and Jane's not going to turn the football over. There was one interception, and I don't remember if it was Hartman or Josh Johnson that threw it. I think it was Hartman. It was a tip that Quan Martin was able to come down with. Not a lot of turnovers on Saturday, but in just watching in 11-on-11s, the DBs are good, man. Like, they're really good. And that's one of the things that I'm most excited to see about the joint practice with New England and then elements of the preseason game. Do not expect to see Marshawn Lattimore in the preseason game. Wouldn't expect a ton from Mikey Sanner still if we see him at all. My guess is that preseason game number one is going to be used for a lot of the guys that need good quality reps on tape. So your second strings, your third strings.
Your Bill Merritts.
But I do, Max, think you will see Trey Amos. Rookie.
Yeah.
And the nice thing about Trey Amos right now is we sit here with Joe Witt Jr. saying every day is a good day for Trey. I don't know that it's a shoe-in that he's going to be starting week one. And I say that not because he's underperformed. He's been really good. But they are five guys deep. They have a really good unit. If Marshawn Lattimore is healthy, which I believe him to be, he starts on one side. Another guy that really stood out to me on Saturday in particular was Jonathan Jones on the outside, a near 10-year vet in the NFL.
A pilot.
Has Super Bowl experience in playing with New England, and he is the latest mercenary on defense. One-year deal. I got to take advantage of it, see if I can get some more money. But he's played really, really well. Now, again, it's tough to judge them based off of what they do in practice against one another because, with respect, guys like KJ Osborne don't separate the same way Terry does. Guys like Chris Moore don't separate the same way that Terry does. Ja'Cory Brooks, Jalen Lane, like you name it. Outside of Debo and Zach Ertz.
There's also stuff like that they're sitting on and stuff like that. You see route combos, you see lineups.
You get comfortable and you can kind of
install, yeah.
Scope them out a little bit.
You can cheat a little bit more.
But there is just the coverage there has been really, really strong. And I was talking to Stanford Steve. Stanford Steve was out there on Saturday.
Really?
So I was talking to him. He and I were just kind of sitting over there. He was looking at Connerly. I was watching 31 because I was just interested. He stuck out to me a couple of times, and I was like, I should probably keep watching him as he gets rotated on. And then you come to the conclusion, you got five guys out there that you feel really confident with. You know, Noah I was DB3 at the end of last year, and I felt pretty good about Noah I being DB3. I knew this year he was going to fall at least a little bit down the ladder. I would say that right now Noah I is DB5. You have the four other guys, Jonathan Jones, Marshawn Lattimore, Mikey, and Trey Amos, and then you have Noah I. If I felt good about him at DB3 last year, he's a great DB5.
You know what's great about this conversation that we're having, Denton? What's unofficial that? Depth chart comes out a little bit later today.
I am begging them to drop this before the end of the show. I don't know when it's going to come out.
It's
probably going to come out at like 3 p.m. or something.
Yeah.
I'm begging them. Like, I know practice is done. The coordinators have each spoken. You probably had an idea of what that unofficial depth chart was looking like before practice. I am begging them to drop this so we can examine it before we get out of here today because I want to see where certain guys land, particularly the defensive backs, to who is going to be the projected unofficial starter on the outside across from Marshawn Lattimore. Because you know, like Lattimore being CB1 is guaranteed at this point. Like that is a lock. He is the best. When he is playing at his best, he is the best CB1. You have four other guys, really three other guys. I don't think that Noah I is going to be starting outside. But you have three other guys that realistically could all play outside. Because Jonathan Jones, I'd feel comfortable with playing outside. If Trey Amos is balling to the point where they are comfortable putting him outside, then I feel really good about him playing outside with Mikey on the slot, knowing that you're going to get all three of those guys on basically every single down, on probably 80%, 90% of the snaps. There will be a couple packages where you're in like goal line and you're like, hey,
Jumbo,
let's get the
yeah.
DBs out of here. We'll just have two, and then we're going to throw a bunch of the big bodies, the large humans in there. So you'll get those, obviously, throughout the course of the season, but you know that you're going to get a large amount of nickel package and then potentially a good amount of dime package.
Yeah.
So if you get those four guys with Sanner still, Lattimore, Jonathan Jones, and Trey Amos out there, that's a pretty darn good group. And I'm really excited to see how they go and match up against New England, where you're going to be hitting for real, and you're going to be seeing route concepts that you are not seeing on a daily basis. Going up against an offense that you do not see on a daily basis.
Ooh.
What is that communication going to look like? I am hoping and anticipating that a guy like Stephon Diggs is going to be ready to practice and practicing in full for New England. So, you know, sometimes in just these one-day joint practices, they'll hold veterans out. I don't want to hold veterans out. I want to see Diggs go up against these DBs. I want to see
Kyle Williams.
I want to see Kyle Williams go up against these DBs, although admittedly, they should eat Kyle Williams for breakfast.
You would hope.
You know, Diggs is a little different because Diggs, very similarly to Zach Ertz, has certain nuances. While athleticism might not be peak anymore, especially coming off of a massive knee injury, he still has the nuances of creating separation with some little things, understanding how to run routes, you know, basically working the DB to get to a position where he always has leverage. So there are a lot of things that a veteran-laden wide receiver like Stephon Diggs would do really, really well. And you would learn a lot if you're Trey Amos going up against a guy like a Stephon Diggs. How is Mikey Sanders still going to go up against a guy like a Stephon Diggs? So I want to see them work against an offense that they are not familiar with. But everything that I've seen from the DBs leaves me feeling pretty darn good about this position group going into 2025 and going into week one against New York. And I think in turn, what happens when you have a great defensive backfield is it make everybody's life easier in front of them, specifically the defensive line. While no one has been on the defensive line an absolute stud, so to speak, you've seen some really flash plays from guys like a Johnny Newton, like a Javon Kinlaw. I saw Javon Kinlaw up close and personal, Max, for the first time. He is, without question, one of the four largest human beings I've ever seen in my life.
Really?
So I had seen him before in practice, but I was on the field, you know, for the family day element of it, and seeing him in pads standing next to like other humans. And you know, part of that is because family day, you do not see like the largest human beings in the world. It's a lot of kids out there. It's a lot of
size comparisons.
Right. There's a lot of big difference in the size. But just looking at him turning over after I'm watching Terry, right? And I turn over and I see Javon Kinlaw and I'm like, oh my God, like that guy's built like Thor.
Who's this monster?
I was like, this guy is a legitimate monster. And all of a sudden, while I still am a little skeptical of the contract that they gave him just because the contract was way over market value, as we love talking about. We love market value.
We but do.
That contract was a little high. I don't think anyone else was going to pay Javon Kinlaw $15 a year. They decide to do that, and then you see him, and you're like, all right, I kind of get it. You know what? Maybe he hasn't had the most amount of success in New York, but you know, New York sucks. You know, they're not good.
Jets are the Jets.
We're much better. We have a much better operation. Like, you know, he got hurt in San Francisco. That's why it didn't work out there. And then he wanted to go play with Robert Saleh. And that was just he was in a bad spot. He's going to be so much better here. I'm excited to see how they rotate guys, because I think Daron Payne's going to have a pretty decent season this year. I'm really excited for Johnny Newton. And that trio of guys on the defensive tackle rotation, I think is going to make life very, very difficult for some opposing offensive lines. And I think that is helped in large part if you have a great defensive backfield. You know, it's funny. So you made a comment earlier, and I'm thinking it. Everyone is thinking it. You're like, hey, Dan Quinn, you want to rebuild the LOB, the Legion of Boom defense.
I never said that.
I did.
But
I'm thinking it. I'm looking at it saying, like, hey, like, what's up? You know,
I'm seeing shades.
You know, that Dallas defense, not last year, obviously, but 2 years ago, that was a turnover machine. There were some similarities. Not quite Legion of Boom, obviously. But it is important to point out that the Legion of Boom was a defensive backfield, great defense first. Bobby Wagner was really good, but he was still very young in his career. That defense was led by the defensive backfield. So it is capable to have a really good defense that is defensive backfield first. And I love Quan Martin, especially a healthy Quan Martin. I like Mikey the same way that all you like Mikey. If what we're hearing about Trey Amos, and what we're seeing about Trey Amos looks the part against other teams, you should be starting to get a little giddy. You should be starting to feel a certain kind of way that's all positive. Because if they just start to create some turnovers, the worst thing, I don't care who is playing wide receiver. I want it to be Terry. I don't care who's playing wide receiver. The worst thing that you can do as an opposing team is give Jayden Daniels a short field. You give Jayden Daniels a short field, he is going to put points up on the board. And if this defense can start to create some turnovers, and they got guys to play the ball really well. Trey Amos plays the ball the way that Ron Rivera thought Emmanuel Forbes was going to play the ball. He's just a lot better at actually playing football, too. And understands the coverages. And understands how to play physical defense when needed at the line of scrimmage, but can also drop back. And is not just getting played the same way that Emmanuel Forbes would oftentimes get played like a fiddle. So there's some really good things to be excited about on this defense. I'm excited to see what Wednesday is going to look like. We'll have, obviously, a bunch of people out there, or at least some people out there. I'm sure Kevin is going to be excited about that as well. He's back tomorrow, by the way, so Kevin will be back tomorrow. Right now, it's the final day of Denton Day in for Kevin Sheehan. I want to play a little bit of what Cliff Kingsbury said, plus Ben Standing wrote a great article about the mental preparation and the grind of Cliff Kingsbury that really speaks to why the offense was so good last year and why we should be really excited about what the offense is going to look like this upcoming season. We'll kind of touch on that a little bit before Ben joins us at 12 when we get back. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show with Denton Day sitting in for Kevin here on the Team 980.
All right, here's what's happening on Monday, August 4th. Commanders camp injury updates. Deebo Samuel is active in practicing today with a jammed finger. Brandon Coleman out today battling leg injury. He'll probably be out for the rest of this week. Dan Quinn says they are not ruling out Sam Cosmi's status for week one. And Terry McLaurin remains on the PUP list with an ankle injury. Over the weekend, Luka Doncic signed a three-year extension with the Los Angeles Lakers worth $165 million as LA looks towards the future without LeBron James. The Nats, they got smoked in a weekend series against the Brewers. Milwaukee set a new team record for the most hits in a series with 56. That's 19 per game. They also tied the third most runs scored for a three-game span in franchise history with 38. The Nats have the day off today. They will get going against the Athletics tomorrow on 106.7 The Fan. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live from 10 to 1, and Craig Hoffman from 4 to 7. Don't forget to like the stream and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that is what's trending.
Tune in to Conspiracy Theories, Cults, and Crimes, a Crime House original podcast to uncover the world's darkest secrets. Find Conspiracy Theories, Cults, and Crimes wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm trying to see if Terry McLaurin is out there at practice. I don't know if you've seen anything, Max.
I have not seen any reports. John Kime did tweet about 2 minutes ago that Jayden Daniels appears to be popular.
Jayden Daniels, according to Nikki Javala, signed a three-month-old.
Oh, you know what? That's awesome. That's cool.
Yeah, that is... I haven't seen that before.
No.
What do you even do with that? Because, you're not tattooing it on the kid.
Well, where do you sign the kid, first of all? Where on the kid's body do you sign...
Let me
the
see.
Child.
I think I just saw a video.
Is
so
there?
Let me see.
Ooh, because there's only so much surface area you can cover on a baby.
Right. There's not a lot. At 3 months, not massive.
Especially out. In this summer heat, they're probably not very bundled up. So you might get a little bit more space on the arm or the legs or the feet.
Oh, but it's on the baby's clothing.
Okay, is it a jersey or is it just baby clothes?
It's just baby clothes, a little onesie. Not footies, it's too hot for footies, although it is actually very nice outside.
It's so nice.
Today, but it's just a onesie.
Is it Commanders themed?
It is, it has the W's.
Hell yes.
All right, over.
Get it framed.
Well, it has had autographs from Jayden Daniels, London Fletcher, and Marshawn Lattimore.
All right, that's cool. I like that.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
So that I guess makes a little bit more sense when you just see the headline of Jayden Daniels signs a child. He would not be the first person that has signed a baby before, but it is an odd experience, I would imagine, to sign a child.
There are very few professional athletes who fall into the sign my baby category. Jayden Daniels is one of them.
Very
and it's very
few.
Nice that we have one of those.
It is very nice because there's I cannot think of a player in the last 25 years that I would say is like sign my child level of important.
I wouldn't even if
I mean maybe Robert me in 2000 and,
over to Sean Taylor.
Maybe Robert in 2012,
yeah,
because they did all of like that change thing. Remember they had all these graphics like the Obama-esque change, but it was Robert's face instead. So maybe Robert in 2012, but like at least with Jaden, it's earned. They're wanting him earned to sign the child because he actually won and got them to an NFC championship where Robert had a PR team ready before he even stepped foot on the practice field here. And to at least his credit, he lived up to it for at least one singular year. Then it kind of got all over the place. Ben Standing's going to join us in 15 minutes. If you're not subscribed to Ben Standing's Substack, I would encourage you to do so. He put out a really good article, or a really good story, rather, on Cliff Kingsbury and how this offense could evolve in year number two, but also giving you a little bit of insight into the way that Cliff Kingsbury operates. And he is a little maniacal in the best way possible when it comes to football. I don't know, not that I care, but I'm going to sound like such an idiot for saying this. I'm going to say it anyway. I don't know that he's in a relationship, so he's married to the game right now.
Sure.
Despite the fact that everyone and their mother thinks he's hot, I don't know that he's in a relationship. He's married to the game right now. Also, seeing him at practice is like kind of funny because that man is in full attire. Long sleeves.
Kitted up.
Sweats. Big hat on. It does not mean that dude is like, hey, I am not, my skin ain't touching the sun.
The darkest Ray-Bans I've ever seen.
He is. He's like, these UV rays are not playing around. And I can't fault him.
As a pale fella, I completely understand where he's coming from.
These UVs are, in fact, not playing around. But Ben put in some really good stuff on Cliff's preparation, what it looks like. And he made this point of, you know, Cliff has spent the entire offseason watching every offensive snap. Now, you hear that on the surface, and you're like, well, yeah, he's watching his own team. No. That is not what I said. I said he watched every offensive snap from across the entire NFL. Like, it's a maniacal level of work, but it's how you stay constantly ahead of the trends in the NFL. The NFL is, in every essence of the word, a very, very trendy product. What you see one team do is often imitated and duplicated by opposing teams. They see it on tape for a year, not even a year. Sometimes it's a week, sometimes it's 2 weeks, a month, whatever it is. They see it, and then they take it. In fact, I mentioned Robert Griffin. That 2012 Redskins team is a perfect example of that. They ran the RPO, the read option that had not really been done before at the NFL level, and to the credit of Robert, he did that offense better than anybody. San Francisco saw it, looked at what they had with Colin Kaepernick once Alex Smith got hurt. They implemented their own version of the RPO, and then they implemented their option, their version of the read option, and then Colin Kaepernick took them to a Super Bowl, where they were a play away from beating that Baltimore Ravens team in 2012. You see what other teams are doing, you then create your spin on it, and then you make it your own. So Cliff taking the time to sit down this offseason and watching every single offensive snap from every single NFL team, I think is very, very fascinating, because you take into consideration that there were a lot of teams in the NFL that had offensively, at least at the skill position, a lot more talent than Washington did. It was Jaden, it was Terry, it was Ertz, and then it was a bunch of dudes, man. And, you know, I liked Deami Brown at the end of the year. Deami was not a number two. Maybe he's a good number three. Noah Brown was a good number two for a little bit prior to him getting hurt. But there was, you know, Jaden was still young for a majority of last season. And there was a lot of throws that at the beginning of the year were not his favorite to make. And then by the end of the year, he had no issue throwing over the middle and having, you know, a lot of success doing so. That's kind of where that relationship with Zach Ertz really developed, because they were throwing over the middle more frequently. So Cliff sitting down to watch every single snap makes me think, Max, you're going to see a lot more creativity. And then when you take in adding Deebo Samuel, adding Laremy Tunsil, it's not like Laremy is going to be catching passes, but you feel way more confident about the blind side of your quarterback with a guy like Laremy Tunsil, but also he's watching run plays. And the addition of Laremy Tunsil on the left, then kicking Brandon Coleman into guard, you know, once he's healthy. He did not practice today, but I don't think this is going to be a long-term issue. Once he's healthy, utilizing the athleticism that Brandon Coleman has, I think really opens up space in the run game. And then you add Ja'Cory Krosky-Merritt, who's still a rookie, yes. We'll kind of get a much better feel for him based off of what we see in preseason game number one on Friday. You know, they're doing contacted practice in Ashburn, but they're not tackling. They're not bringing guys to the ground in 11-on-11. It's a smack, a wrap, and then that's pretty much it.
Yeah, thud and wrap.
Which, you know, a part of me is like, I want to see tackling. I think it's better for guys to be tackling, but then a part of me is like, let's not get anybody hurt. God forbid you try and bring a guy down in practice trying to show off and you hip drop him, and then you break a guy's leg, which I believe happened was it Miami or Arizona? It happened somewhere in the NFL.
See, the Raiders came to mind for me, but I know it did happen on a hip drop tackle very recently. I think Mike Florio tweeted about it, but I'm not 100% sure because we know how Mike Florio loves to talk about hip drop tackles.
He does. Mike Florio is a big anti-hip drop guy, which, to be fair, I'm a big anti-hip drop guy too because you see these sorts of things, but God forbid that happens in practice. It was the Colts. All right. So it was the Colts. They had a guy that got injured because they're taking guys to the ground and it ends up being a hip drop. But in seeing what Bill can add to this offense, everybody's raved about him, his vision, his ability to cut, to attack the hole, some things that we had some issues with Brian Robinson not doing last year. So there are a lot of changes that Kliff could make to this that really add an explosivity to the offense that for large parts existed because of number five, but number five had to do a lot of the work, whereas now it's a lot easier to get more people involved because you're more talented on offense, and that really opens the door for what 2025 could look like for this Commanders offense, but then also just for Jaden himself as he goes into year number two. I think the idea of a sophomore slump is not as frequent in 2025 as it has been in years past, especially for a guy like Jaden, who has done some stuff off of the field this summer and this offseason, but he's really been about football. If you talk to him, if you ask about it, he's really grinding tape during the offseason, and he's really trying to get better for year number two. This dude is football first, second, third, and fourth, and then he can get into some other stuff. Shoes, Paris Fashion Week, women, what have you. But he's football first, second, third, and fourth. Here's what Kliff said. This was in Ben Standing's article. Here's what Kliff said about Jaden in year number two. He said, quote, "He's thinking less, playing faster, letting his natural gifts take over." That's what Kliff said in June. "That's what we want to see. I expect him to take a big jump." He continued saying, "When you have a player like that, and he's the one telling me what time to be there, that's a special deal." We have heard all of these stories about Jaden getting there insanely early.
Before the Sun even thinks about
Dan Quinn up. Said, as you mentioned last week, he sees Jaden walking off of the field as the sun is rising. If you are an early bird, I'm an early bird. If you're an early bird, the sun is usually rising at around 5:30, 5:35 here in the D.C. area, the DMV area. If he's walking off of that field when the sun is rising, he's been out there for a little bit.
For at least an hour.
For at least 30 minutes, 45 minutes to an hour, right? Going over plays, simulating some things, getting his footwork right. And if he's telling Kliff, hey, I need you here at this time so we can work on some things, that's a really, really positive sign, right?
Jaden's getting a lot more vocal, too.
He is so much more comfortable.
Yeah.
In the huddle. He's so much more comfortable on the sideline. He's so much more comfortable on media tours or media hits. Like he's coming into his personality. And I never felt necessarily that he was uncomfortable last year, but you can just see there's a bit more of a relaxation in it. And because there's a bit more of a relaxation, that gets to the first part of this quote. He's not thinking as much. Mm-hmm. He's just allowing the game to happen and then using his natural instincts and his natural gifts to then play. And how many times, like, this was the biggest issue with Carson Wentz, is that Carson Wentz would think too much. And when he started thinking too much, you're like, well, he's lost. He's losing it. He's doing too much upstairs, when you need to just let the game take over and let you as a natural, gifted quarterback allow your instincts to take over. Carson Wentz never did that. He would do too much thinking. Jaden just being a natural and thinking less, not getting in his own head, and reacting, responding, that to me is incredibly positive. So the fact that Cliff is saying this is what's going on here, I think is a really, really good sign. And then, I mentioned that he went through every single offensive snap. This is what Ben's article said. It says, Commander's offensive coordinator didn't go full airplane mode after the season. Sure, he disappeared to an unknown European coastlines without his football playbook in tow.
My guess is Croatia.
Must be nice. Yeah. Yeah, Cliff ain't going to where everybody else is going, I'll tell you that. But Kingsbury also pondered new ways to develop, ways to deploy electric quarterback Jaden Daniels and maintain his annual tradition of watching every offensive snap from every NFL team, every single one. Get a life, you might say. Kingsbury would counter and say, this is the life. That man is married to the game. That is a level of grind that we have not had here. And when we talk about ways that this offense can mature in year number two, can develop in year number two, when you have a guy in Cliff that is as dedicated as that, a guy in Jaden, who despite all of the success in 2025, he still gets in early. Like, he very easily could be like, hey, we got to the NFC Championship game. If I was getting in at 5 last year, I'm going to get in at 5:30. Just to let a little bit of complacency gets you off your little routine and you start to feel a little bit of a way about yourself. You're puffing up your ego a little bit. That does not seem to be the case. Nothing has changed about the way that they are approaching the 2025 season from the way they approached the 2024 season, albeit with just a little bit more of a comfortability on what the offense is trying to do and what Washington is trying to do in 2025. I look at these quotes, Max, and I laugh at the trend, this topic that kind of dominated airwaves last year of the Cliff. They had that two-game stretch against Philadelphia, three-game stretch against Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, and Dallas.
There's a lot of talk before that Titans game,
and there was a lot of bad offense. I mean, the first half against Dallas was awful. It was probably the worst half of football they played the entire season. They couldn't do anything against that defense, and everyone's like, it's the Cliff. He did this with Kyler in Arizona. He did this with Patrick Mahomes at Texas Tech, not taking into consideration that one, at Texas Tech and at college, the college level, the first four games of your season are against nobodies, and then you play like good teams in the final remaining eight games of your season. And then not taking into consideration in Arizona that your quarterback can't see over the line of scrimmage. That's a pretty big deal. Jaden can see over the line of scrimmage. It was not a Cliff. It was that his quarterback literally could not see. And defenses realize if I put my hands up, his life gets exponentially more difficult because he already can't see over me. And then once my hands are raised, he really can't see over my outstretched hands because he's measured 5'9", but he's really probably like 5'7". You get a tall quarterback that is grinding the way that Jaden is grinding. Things are going to look really, really good in the year 2025. We'll get some more insight on this article. Ben Standing joins us next. Brian DiArdo, CBS Sports, joins us in 35 minutes. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show with Dent Day sitting in for Kevin here on the Team 980.
Tune in to Conspiracy Theories, Cults, and Crimes, a Crime House original podcast to uncover the world's darkest secrets. Find Conspiracy Theories, Cults, and Crimes wherever you get your podcasts.